Welcome back, crime fanatics. This is Kat.
And I'm Steph.
And you know that I must love you because I just pulled myself away from watching Sweet Home Alabama on E, which I watch every single time that it is on. So it must be very important to me that I'm here podcasting to make sure we get our episode in this week. Today is a Steph episode, and she will get to her case in just a moment, but I had something that I wanted to share that I think Steph will appreciate. Apparently, I know you guys know we discussed before that now weed is legal as of January 1st in Illinois, and apparently there are supper clubs in Chicago that are like pop-up supper clubs where you get a weed-infused dinner that is six courses. It's $125 per seat. And apparently, there's also, I don't know if it's the exact same company, but it was on the same article that they have puff and paint nights. Like, and I thought that was so cool. I don't think I could do a full six course meal of
I
that's
don't
a
know.
lot of, I don't know. I would have to know exactly what was in there. That's a lot of, I don't know. Anybody who's done edibles, I think that's a lot of weed, right? Six courses.
I mean, especially if it's like baked into like coconut oil or butter or something like that. And it's like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I would probably be so fucked up by the end of that dinner.
That's what I'm thinking, but and then I wonder, so it says the experience infuses THC and CBD oil into artisan dinners. So I don't know. I'd be interested to try it or definitely look into it because I think it'd be cool. It's kind of expensive, but I mean,
Did it say just
there's
CBD?
no, it says THC and or
Oh,
CBD oil.
okay.
Yeah. Into artisan dinners. So I don't know. I mean, I would just have to find out more information on it, which they didn't give you like what exactly is in, like how much. For me, I think it'd be too much probably because a little goes a long way for me. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was cool. I had to share. I figured maybe this will get stuff up here quicker.
I mean, it just might.
So we are going to make sure we record a mini episode for you guys this week as well. So I think we're gonna hop right in tonight and maybe any extras we have we'll hold off till if that's okay with you.
Yep, I'm good with
Unless you
that.
have something else to add before you jump into your case.
No.
All right, well then, let's get to it.
Okay, so today I am telling you about Brian Schaefer. He went missing in 2005, but let's start with a little bit of his backstory. He was born on February 25th, 1979. Brian grew up in Pickerington, Ohio. Pickerington is a suburb of Columbus, where he later attended Ohio State. His parents, Randy and Renee, had Brian and another son, Derek. Brian graduated from high school in 1997. After graduation, he attended Ohio State for his undergrad in microbiology. Following that degree, he was accepted to the Ohio State School of Medicine in 2004. During his second year there, his mother died of, now I'm gonna totally fuck up this name, myelodysplasia? I don't know.
I don't know what that means exactly, but
So, and I got a definition for you. That is a group of cancers in which immature blood cells in the bone marrow do not mature and therefore do not become healthy blood cells, which is just
I
fucking terrible.
feel like cancer is what kills everybody these days.
Yeah, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that one. His friends are reported saying that although he appeared to be dealing with it well, he was very close to his mom, so it was obviously very hard on him. Which, I mean, I know exactly what it feels like to lose a parent. Even though you think you're prepared for it, you're definitely not prepared for that. Brian had another woman in his life, Alexis Wagner. Alexis was also a second-year medical student. She, along with numerous others, thought that Brian would be proposing that year. The couple had a trip planned to Miami during spring break. On Friday, March 31st, 2006, classes had ended for break. Brian and his father, Randy, celebrated by going out to eat earlier that evening. Randy noted that Brian had seemed really exhausted from cramming for exams and thought that he shouldn't be going out that night, but Brian had plans to meet up with a friend, William Clint Florence, but his father didn't say anything to him about, like, going home and resting instead of going out.
Mm-hmm.
At 9 p.m. the night of the 31st, Brian met up with Clint at the Ugly Tuna Saluna, a bar on High Street.
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like the most unfortunate name for a bar ever.
I kind of want to go there. I'm actually, that's like, what?
It's definitely closed.
The Ugly
now.
Tuna Saluna. All right.
Yeah, it's no longer in operation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why.
So that's a bar on High Street near campus around like Ohio State. Around 10 p.m., Brian called Alexis. She had went home to Toledo before their trip, and Toledo is about an hour and a half north of where I am, and Ohio State's about an hour and 15 minutes south of where I am. So it's quite a ways away. After that, Brian and Clint went bar hopping, hitting up all the big local spots. At each bar, Clint said he and Brian both had one shot each of liquor. After midnight, the pair met up with a friend of Clint's, and she took them back to the Ugly Tuna. While the three were there, Brian got separated, and despite efforts to find him, they left when the bar closed at 2. There is a video of the trio entering the bar, but nothing of Brian leaving. When Clint and his friend didn't see him in the crowd of departing people, they decided that he must have just went home already. Later that weekend, Alexis and Randy tried to call Brian, but there was no answer. On Monday morning, he missed his flight to Miami, the trip he had planned with his girlfriend, which is super unlike him, is what I'm reading, that he was just always on time, punctual, he didn't miss things that he had planned, and especially if they thought that he might propose on this trip. But
oh
yeah, police began their searches for Brian at the Ugly Tuna. The Ugly Tuna. It's such an awful name. The area around the
I just hope you insert it into the podcast as episode as many times as you can.
I mean, we should count at the end how many times I say it. The area around the bar had such a high crime rate, the bar had security cameras installed not long before this incident. When police reviewed the footage, it showed Brian, Clint's friend, going up the escalator to the bar's main entrance at around 1:15 a.m. Brian was seen outside the bar briefly, talking with two women, then moving off camera to presumably re-enter the bar at 1:55 a.m. Now remember, the bar closes at 2. And when they...
So probably smoking is my guess. He's probably, like, having a cigarette.
Right.
Before re-entering. Okay.
So when the bar closed, there's no video surveillance of Brian leaving that building whatsoever. And yeah.
So he went out a back door somewhere.
Well, the surrounding businesses all have security cameras that hit every vantage point around the Ugly Tuna. So, but I have theories at the end of this.
Okay.
Columbus has the most...
I want to see all that video footage.
Columbus has the most security cameras of any city in Ohio. Officers then reviewed video from other businesses to see if they could explain how Brian left the bar, but there was no trace of him. Police began to search further away from the Ugly Tuna, sometimes with dogs. They looked closely in the streets, inspecting dumpsters and other waste containers, and asking residents if they had seen him. There were flyers posted of Brian's pictures showing a tattoo on his upper right arm of a stick figure logo from a cover artwork by Pearl Jam, which was his favorite band. Police even convinced the city to let them search the sewer system. Back at Brian's apartment, nothing appeared to be off either. In all of their searching, nothing useful was ever uncovered. Those who had seen Brian that evening were asked to take a lie detector test. Clint's friend and Randy both passed theirs, as did everyone else, except Clint. He refused to take one, which was advised by his lawyer, which is very strange to me. If you didn't have anything...
It's strange to me that his lawyer would advise him to take one.
Well...
I feel like a lawyer always will tell you absolutely not.
I mean, but this is 2006. I think now lawyers would be, like, very adamant about not taking a lie detector test, but I don't know how they were, you know...
I guess. It's not that long ago. Well, I guess it's, like...
It's 2020.
Shit, 14 years ago now. Yeah, I guess. Shit, guys. Time's just passing me by here.
Kat just realized we're old.
Hey, calm down. I like the term mature. Okay. So he clearly went back into the building on surveillance and then just never came back out of the building.
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to tell me what his friends said?
So Clint, like, he's not report. He didn't talk to anybody, like, other than to give, like, a recount of what happened, like, leading up to them getting separated.
Okay. That's suspicious as fuck. Okay, go on. Right.
So the two women that Brian was seen talking to said in 2009 they were never asked to take a lie detector test, which is also strange.
But what did they... information though, like anything? He was probably out having a cigarette with them. That's like my immediate gut reaction. Also, I don't suspect two women generally. It's possible, certainly possible, but of having like smuggled him out of there in their purse or what? Like, I don't know.
Well, we'll get there.
Okay.
So, Alexis would call Brian's phone every evening before going to bed for a long time after his disappearance. Usually it went straight to voicemail, but one night in September, it rang three times. Singular said that what Alexis heard was a computer glitch. A ping from the phone from that night actually detected that his cell phone was in Hilliard, which is like 20 minutes from campus.
Okay. So a little bit further away than the club that he was at. Okay.
Which...
Hilliard. Okay.
Yeah, just... It doesn't make sense. Why would his phone ring, even if it's computer glitch?
And if it wasn't a computer glitch if his phone pinged.
Right. That's... It just doesn't make sense.
Huh.
So, okay. Police received hundreds of tips, none of which resulted in any actual leads. Pearl Jam performed in Cincinnati, and lead singer
Eddie Vedder, yeah.
There you go.
You're going to get yelled at for that one.
By who?
Anybody that likes Pearl Jam.
Oh.
Eddie Vedder. Go on.
Okay. He took time between songs to ask for tips in Brian's disappearance, but none of these were considered useful either. Possible sightings in Michigan, Texas, and even Sweden were investigated, which is really strange to me that people can, from other countries, are being like, hey, your guy might be here.
How old is he again?
Oh, God.
20, like 21 at the time?
Well, he's in med school, so like 27.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, generally trafficking would be females and young females, but he's probably too old to be being trafficked, so never mind. I was thinking if he was, like, actually a teenager, maybe, possibly, but...
Well, I have my theories, remember?
Okay.
Yeah, you just gotta let me get there. So, Randy, who was still grieving the loss of his wife, continued to search for Brian every chance he got. He even consulted a psychic who said Brian's body was in water near a bridge. So, Randy, Brian's brother Derek, and others who had become invested all went out and bought, now, waders, I think that's how you say it. I'm not a fisherman, so I don't know, and
Yeah.
searched all along the Olentangy River, focusing on the spots closest to bridges. So the Olentangy River, compared to where the Ugly Tuna was, is probably no more than 5 miles away. So I mean that's a good possibility that he may have somehow ended up there. But in September 2008, just 2.5 years after his son's disappearance, during a heavy windstorm, Randy was out in his yard cleaning debris, and a branch A branch had fallen and fatally struck him. Neighbors
Oh.
found his body the next morning and called police.
What?
Yeah. So this whole family has one person left now, just the son, Derek.
Oi. Okay.
So after his obituary was posted online, a condolence book was posted as well. One of the signatures in it said, "To Dad, love Brian," and his location was the U.S. Virgin Islands. But it was later found out that the person who posted the comment did it as a hoax because it was from Columbus.
Oh.
Yeah.
But then how did it was, but it said it was from Virgin Islands?
I guess you can tweak if you know what you're doing, like
Oh.
how like your computer can post your location. I don't know.
Okay.
So
Yeah, but I feel like that they should look into that person, even if it was a hoax, just because, well, okay, go ahead and let tell me if they come up with anything from that.
The theory, the one theory that the police actually support is that he left on his own accord. He may have,
Okay.
maybe the women were there to help him leave. Maybe he changed clothes and, because there's security footage. So maybe he put a hat on, kept his head down, changed his clothes so that way no one would recognize him leaving. And, he left on his own accord, which a grieving person can do a lot of crazy things, but you think he would have came back by now. So another, go ahead.
Not only that, I want to watch this footage because I bet you I could pick him out even if he did change.
Right. So
Like,
another.
I feel like there's just certain things about the way a person walks or whatnot, and just little catches that I would assume detectives would catch as well after watching it enough times.
You would think so. But there was construction going on around the Ugly Tuna, like right when this happened. So cadaver dogs were actually.
The ugly tuna Saluna. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
What
I
if it was a strip club called the Ugly Tuna Saluna?
that would be bad for business. Oh my
I'm
God.
sorry, but there's one by us, total sidebar, that is called, well, I don't actually I don't think it exists anymore, but it was always a joke. It was a strip club. And they had all you can eat fish fry on Fridays.
What the
Like,
fuck?
that's, yeah.
That's weird
Come
as
on in,
fun.
guys. Yeah. It's too bad it wasn't called the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
The strip club we have here in town, it's called I think it's called Fantasyland West, but we just call it
Oh.
Dirty 30 because it's on State Route 30.
Nice.
It's disgusting. That's not a strip club you want to go to. But okay.
It's in Columbus. Is that Columbus?
No, it's actually here where I live.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Like
I've never been there. I have no.
one of those good daytime suburban strip clubs.
Yeah,
Only the finest.
you got Metheny and Sniffany.
I'm gonna leave that alone.
Was a good one. Okay, so cadaver dogs were brought out by the construction sites and actually searched, and like nothing ever came of that. But the next theory that You and I have talked about before, Kat.
Ah, this is the one I was wondering in the
Yes.
beginning. Okay.
Yes, the smiley face theory.
So, okay. Is there a body of water or like a river or a lake close to the bar that he went missing at?
Yeah, the Olentangy River where his dad was searching for him in the water. It's less than
But
5 miles.
how far away is that from the club or bar or whatever it is? The Tuna Saluna.
Hold on, let me pull up Google Maps.
Because I feel like every smiley face killer case. So I don't know, for those of you listening, there's actually a documentary. There are detectives that try and figure out strange cases of 20-something, usually year-old males across the US who usually are out late at night, almost always drinking, and then don't end up finding their way home. They're usually found, though, or at least the ones that they're investigating months later in some sort of body of water that's close by where they went missing. Often it seems as though while they were out drinking, they've been drugged or something along those lines. And then they're when they are found, the ones that I've seen investigated, there's usually a spray painted smiley face somewhere around where the body's been found. So when this one came up and I'm like a 20-something year old out drinking that just disappears, I asked Steph and we were discussing whether it could be one that fits the smiley face killer profile.
So I have to correct something. I've been saying the Olentangy River. It's the Scioto River that's close to campus, but it is a like 3 miles away from the bar.
Okay. So that's a little far though, but not 100%
Right.
take it out of the running, but that is a little further than normal, I would say.
So, and I, the last time I talked to Kevin, my friend, he said that Columbus has completely shut down this theory connecting Brian to the smiley face theory.
Okay.
But
I feel like every police department doesn't even really acknowledge the smiley face
well, and
theory
I mean, it's hard
in
because
general.
you and I get it when we can connect it in our heads, but for people who work solely on like facts and forensic evidence, there is a huge lack of those two things when it comes to this
It's like
theory.
chasing a ghost.
Yeah.
I mean, they can only charge or convict things based on evidence. You have to have DNA, you have to have some kind of forensic evidence. A body helps. The fact that there is no body, like, you have to have things to go off of. For us, the only reason this came up in my head was because of his age, the fact that he was out drinking and now he's missing. Like completely mysteriously, nobody has any idea what happened to him. So that could be a million things, but the first thing that popped into my head was the smiley face killer.
Yep. And
So.
honestly, like that's what I tend to lean towards because in our mini that we're gonna cover, I'm gonna have something else to tell you too about this. But
Ooh.
yeah.
Make
So
sure you guys listen to the mini that will drop later this week as well.
I just find it hard to believe that every law enforcement agency, be it state, local, like federal, just dismisses this theory with like no credibility.
For me, as soon as you have more than one case where a body of a 20-something-year-old male who was out drinking and then ends up, so often when they find the bodies of these men, the decomp doesn't match how long they've been missing. So basically, somebody had them for a while because it just doesn't, like the facts don't match. And then as soon as you have more than one of them with a smiley face, unless this is something that I'm unaware of, like sublime, but it's not a sublime. But like, it's just odd. Why is there a smiley face spray painted close to where the body has been found? And often there's things. So there's actually a documentary. It's like on demand, and I wish I could remember the name of the detectives. I'm not caught up on it, but I watched like the first 4 or 5 episodes of it. And there's just so many similarities in the cases and so many unexplained things. They believe there could be possibly, it's like retired detectives who are now taking this on and trying to connect the dots between these cases, and seeing if the smiley face killer is a real thing, if it's a real theory that holds any kind of water. But for me, them discussing that it could be either more than one person or that it could be like a truck driver, which makes complete sense to me because it's usually close to a city and they're spread out along, they say it in the documentary, like basically routes that like a truck driver would take. So it kind of makes sense.
Well, and that would make sense with Brian too, because 315 runs along the Scioto River, and that is a huge major road in Columbus.
So, I mean, we're just armchair sleuths here trying to figure things out for ourselves. So, this theory isn't something that we're saying is 100% fact. But for me, it's a very interesting theory that you could definitely go on Reddit. I'm sure there are rabbit holes you could climb down for days. So.
Yeah, so the detectives' names that you were trying to think of is Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte and Dr. Lee Gilbertson.
Okay. Yeah. Have you watched the documentary at all?
No, because
Well, it's like a sh it's a show. It's a series.
whenever we talked about this the very first time, I just haven't been able to find it.
It's on demand by me. I wonder if it's still on demand because it's been a while since I started it and I haven't followed back up because I've been wasting my time watching things like Sweet Home Alabama instead, but
But I don't have cable though, remember?
oh, I wonder if it's online, or I bet you Netflix doesn't have it. I don't remember what channel it is. I just know it was on demand and I'd watch it like late night when I should have been sleeping.
Yeah,
So.
you'll have to check it out to see if it's still there. 'Cause I have ways that I can watch stuff. I just need to know what it's called.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's my case for this week.
All right.
The smiley
Well,
face theory is like a huge rabbit hole that we can
oh my God.
we could spend like fucking days talking about it with
I
everything.
have so many questions. Like, and the unfortunate thing is like with us, when we want to try and help solve cases like this or try and figure out the whys, like, of everything, we don't have all the information that the investigators have. And that is huge. So I'm just very curious the more information that we're missing on this case. Like, how is it possible that he never came out? Like, I really want to watch that footage because I'm very curious if it's true that, like, if he really actually never came out of the bar or club or whatever, the Tuna Saluda. Like, and then I would want to know more about the people he was with. His friend Clint seems suspicious as shit. Like, if your friend is missing, even if you're awkward socially or whatever the case is, I would still think that you would do anything you could to help them find your friend, you know? So
Well, maybe Brian did leave on his own and Clint was helping him.
was just thinking that as I said it, but then I'm thinking,
I mean, that's not likely in
after
my
all
head.
of this, wouldn't you have broke and said something to someone? Like, maybe not. That's a good friend, but
I mean, I wouldn't be able to
I
keep a
don't know.
secret. I'd fucking tell you and
Not
Mike.
14 years later.
Right?
I mean, it's like, and was there any activity on his bank accounts? Do we
No,
know?
they looked at everything like that and nothing ever came up.
And his cell phone hasn't pinged since that
That,
one time
yeah.
that his girlfriend. So his money is untouched. Red flag number one for me, that I feel like he's probably no longer still alive. Cell phones, I could see that being whatever. You can get a burner phone, you can get a new cell phone. But the fact that his money and accounts and stuff are untouched. Did he have a pet? Did he live alone? These are the things that make me like, did they actually leave, or did somebody, is there some sinister shit going on?
Well, since he lived in campus housing, I don't think that you're allowed to have pets.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that he probably didn't have a pet. And it didn't say that him and his girlfriend lived together. So he could have had, like, roommates
Roommates.
of the same sex. Because I'm not sure, since he was in, like, already done with, like, undergrad, if he got, like, special apartments. But it's still campus housing.
Did you give a description of what he looks like so we know? We'll definitely post a picture to Instagram and Facebook so that if any of you have any information on the disappearance, that you can call 911 or the, is it Columbus Police?
Yes.
Who is the department?
Well,
Columbus Police? Okay.
I have a phone number I'm getting ready to share.
Awesome.
So the reward is still up to $100,000 for his,
Oh, wow.
yeah. So he is 6'2". He weighs 160 to 165 pounds, has hazel eyes, and his the tattoo, the Pearl Jam symbol on his upper right arm. And any information can be called to Central Ohio Crime Stoppers at 645-8477, and you will obviously remain anonymous with that. But I'll save the picture that I'm looking at since it's got like everything on it, and we'll post that to the Instagram on Wednesday when this episode goes live.
Yeah, and if you used to hang out at the Tuna Saluna, you may know something and you don't even realize you know it. Seeing his picture may jog your memory of something odd that happened. Maybe you were there that night. So go check out our Instagram for pictures of him. If you have anything, definitely contact. All right, my friends. Did you have anything else on that case that you wanted to add, Steph?
No, I think I got everything out that I wanted to.
It's a sad case. It's one of those, like, I can't imagine having a family member missing. And that's actually what we focused on for our mini-sode. We're missing persons that we'd like to help solve as well. So this is basically our help solve a missing persons case week, I guess.
I mean,
Which we
what?
didn't even necessarily do on purpose,
No,
but.
not at all, because you didn't really know who I was going to do.
Yeah. When I
And
was like, hey, you know what we should do?
then
We should do a mini sode where we each pick a missing person local to us. And so yeah, but I mean, this is kind of the whole point of what we've wanted to do from the beginning is to obviously we enjoy covering cases that you guys want to hear about, from serial killers to the local cases and just mysterious cases. But also the whole point of us really starting the podcast was to help solve the unsolved ones. And just get the information out there to get eyes on it, because once a case is caught cold, nobody's really paying all that much attention to it, and it just tends to stay that way until somebody brings it up and gets it back in the light. So doing these kind of makes my heart a little happy. Hopefully we will end up getting some progression in the cases that we're covering this week. I mean, obviously we hope for the best, but with that amount of time, just helping some closure for the family is always a good goal. So,
Yes, absolutely.
right. Well, if you are listening still, please go give us a review on Apple Podcast. The more you review us, the more people will see us. Or if you listen on Spotify or any whatever wherever you get your podcast fix, definitely just go click on the subscribe button. Because the more followers we have, the more things we're able to do, the more people will see us as well. So, I have been posting a lot lately on Twitter. Definitely go follow us over there. True Crime Project, but our handle is at crime underscore project. And then you can definitely follow us on Instagram as well. We post funnies and all of the pictures from our podcast episodes. So hit us up over there. Do you have anything else you want to add, my friend?
No.
All right, guys. Well, it's been a slice. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.